five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Paul, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Hello, hello, hello once again, and welcome to episode 46 of Field Pass Hockey's American Hockey League podcast, The Holy Grail. This is the episode for December the 15th, and we are here to give you a recap of the last week in AHL hockey. Of course, in today's show, we not only have the latest in AHL news, but in, I guess, a deja vu from last week, we have two more guests for you this week. In the first of upcoming focuses on each division in the AHL, we are going to be welcoming two of our fellow reporters here to talk everything about the Atlantic Division, from who's been tearing it up this season to who needs a little bit of help. And there's even going to be a little bit of comparison on Pets personalities versus Atlantic Division teams. Just trust me, you'll want to stick around for this one as we welcome Sam Wismer from Flyers Nitty Gritty and the American Beauties podcast, as well as our colleague here at Field Pass Hockey, Zachary Martin, who covers the Charlotte Checkers. That will be coming up later on in the show. But first, you know how we do it here. We always have an introduction question to kind of, you know, get to know us a little bit more and all that good stuff. So guys, question. You have a chance to design a mascot for any AHL team, whether they have a mascot or not. Tell me about your mascot. And Corey, you're going to go first because Andrew's not here this week. He's celebrating a birthday with his grandmother. So happy birthday to Andrew's grandmother, even though she'll probably never hear this, but you know, happy birthday nonetheless.
Oh, that's a tough question. It's like the perennial question. I feel like my perception of a mascot is never the same as what actually comes out. Like for many years, being a Philadelphia Flyers fan, the question was, what would the Flyers ever had if they had a mascot? You know, nobody ever really knew. And then all of a sudden, Gritty pops on the scene, and you're just sort of like, oh. Like, you know, initial reaction was not good, to say the least. But I think with any mascot, it's not like the design necessarily, but how they handle it. You know, Gritty did some shenanigans. He was always involved in something silly. I mean, the first time I ever saw him, he was swinging from the rafters. You know, he literally swung down from the rafters way back and forth. The guy who's inside the suit is insane. You know, swung down to the ice, landed on it, you know, totally fine. So I'm going to go ahead and say, I don't know how to design a mascot. I would be terrible at it. I'm not creative enough for that. But it's all about how you handle a mascot. And, you know, I talked about Coco the Bear a couple of times on this show, and we watched a video of him from the 90s, I believe it was, where he was, you know, doing some shenanigans and, you know, kind of some Gritty-esque escapades. I think it's all about how much fun you have with a mascot that's really important for setting the tone for that one. So I'd be more in the department of designing what a mascot would do, not necessarily the design itself, because I can't think of anything, honestly.
And I'm Dina Weinheimer. And, you know, I always thought it was one of the most strange things that the Lake Erie Monsters, well, formerly the Lake Erie Monsters, I obviously still want to call them that, and the Cleveland Monsters have a mascot that's a seagull, Sully. As much as I love Sully and his inflatable version of Swoley, they need a version that's a monster. I mean, there's a legend. You guys learned, I think it was last week, that I'm big into, like, myths and lore and all that stuff. But there is a version of the Loch Ness Monster that is the Lake Erie Monster named Bessie. There is your mascot right there. I mean, you've already got the photo or the drawing of her on the monster's logo. There's the name. There it is. It's so simple. Why don't they capitalize on that? That's my question.
That's a good one. And I honestly, I was like, I need to go to my backup here because Dina alphabetically is getting to the monsters before I am. So I need to be ready.
Sorry.
You're all good. I've also always kind of thought that the monsters logo kind of looks like the dragon from How to Train Your Dragon. Like, I don't think it actually does, but for some reason that always kind of like reminds me of.
It does look like Toothless. It really does.
A little bit, right? I don't know. Maybe I'm like losing my mind a little bit over here. But what's up, everyone? It's Jeremy. And I would say Corey, you made me nervous because I thought you were going to go down the Lehigh Valley route with a companion for Gritty, because that's where my heart goes. I think that Gritty's my favorite NHL mascot. Like, I will sing Gritty's praises till the cows come home. People always say, well, he's ugly. I didn't say I like him because he's cute. I like him because he's a mess. Like, I love that. Like, I love when mascots imitate reality, right? And so I can't think of a better mascot for the Flyers than somebody who resembles a mess. But anyway, all love, Corey.
Too true.
Right? As a resident co-Blue Jackets fan. But I digress. I'll move on. No disrespect to mascot Melvin, but I want Gritty's counterpart in Lehigh Valley. Like, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know that any of us do. It's probably your sleep paralysis demon. But I would love to see just as unhinged, just as messy of a mascot in Lehigh Valley for the affiliate there. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that about Lehigh Valley to Philadelphia. It's actually kind of a reverse thing. I think Melvin kind of spawned Gritty rather than the other way around. Melvin used to get up to some wacky shenanigans. I have a very distinct memory from the 2018 Outdoor Classic between the Phantoms and the Bears, where there was some Bears fans that were throwing snowballs at Melvin. And I remember he, you know, quick turned around, saw the fan that was throwing a snowball at him, and, you know, just made this absolute dash to him. And he would get into some shenanigans. They were very Gritty-esque before Gritty was even a thing, to be honest with you. So I think, although Gritty's kind of stolen the spotlight, Melvin was first, I think, in terms of some of the shenanigans.
So before we go on to Zach, we need to talk about this here real quick. Yes, they do look very, very, very similar. On the right, on the right, if you're watching this on YouTube, is the Cleveland Monsters logo. On the left, Toothless from How to Train Your Dragon. Basically, the big difference is the Lake Erie monster does not have wings. But yeah, very similar vibe, different eye color.
That we know of, honestly.
True.
I will say this about the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. It's going to have to be something from the Phantom of the Opera if we do, because I don't think it's kind of capitalized enough. But for me, I'm going to stay up north, and I want you to close your eyes and think about this for a moment, okay? You're in Calgary, okay? You got this cowboy. He's riding on this like mechanical bobblehead horse. And as he goes around the stands, you can see the horse's head kind of bobble up and down. And, you know, it's just a good time. He's just riding the horse and the game's going on. Tell me that wouldn't be great. Maybe he has a lasso and he can like rattle up a few fans or something. I don't know.
Just every time before he makes an appearance, you just hear like just like the little tumbleweed.
Oh my gosh! Yes, this.
I don't hate that. You actually, Zach, probably have the most like spot, like legitimate.
This is claim good.
Here to a mascot. I think if that happens, we've got some room.
Even if it's one of those like little like broomsticks with the horse's head on it, you know, those little plushy ones. I think that would spice enough.
Imagine how much money they would make in selling those. Like, how many parents would just be absolutely livid over the fact that they had to buy their kid a little, like, replica mascot horse.
I would be the adult standing there just saying, please don't move. I want to touch the horse's head and just, like, making it bobble. Because I do that to my own bobbleheads. I just sit there, like, go. I need this, Calgary. Make it happen, please. All right. Well, we're going to transition from that fun to a significantly more serious note. So pardon the quick change in tone here, but we do have some breaking news that we need to cover. And If you're new to the show, we do record on Tuesday nights. So this news literally coming out while we are recording regarding Noah Corson, who is under a two-way contract with the Utica Comets and is currently playing with the ECHL's Adirondack Thunder. And Zach does have a press release from the Utica Comets, and we'll share that with us. And I guess before we go into that, I need to mention that this segment does contain references to sexual assault. So if you do not want to listen to that, I will include a timestamp down below in the show notes, in on YouTube in the description, so you can pass by this if you so choose.
So the Utica Comets have released a statement on Tuesday night. Quote, "The Utica Comets are aware of the recent sexual assault allegations against forward Noah Carson, who is currently assigned to the Adirondack Thunder of the ECHL. Corson's agent has informed the organization that Noah will be taking an indefinite leave of absence effective immediately. The organization has no further comment to this matter."
And TSN senior correspondent Rick Westhead, who has covered so many of these same types of stories over the last few years, had released some additional information saying that Noah Corson is charged, and this is a quote from his article. I'll be sure to link this as well. But he has been charged with sexually assaulting a woman who was under the age of 16 while Noah Corson was playing major junior hockey in Quebec. And this is per newly obtained court documents. Those documents indicate that an alleged sexual assault took place between October 1st, 2016 and January 1st, 2017 in Drummondville, Quebec. And it was actually, I mean, this story actually broke earlier on Radio Canada, reported it a little bit earlier on into, you know, on this day, on Tuesday. And also saying that this also allegedly involved two other men, one of whom was a teammate in Drummondville. Two other defendants in this case have already pled guilty, according to Radio Canada, although it is unclear at this time when pleas were entered and what punishments have been decided on by the court. But Corson's agent is declining to discuss this at this time. And that's basically all we know right now, other than, of course, these are allegations, but we do have to report on them because this is affecting an American Hockey League team. There is no deal or plea at this time. And of course, you know, this is all very much in its infancy stage. But he's on a two-way contract that was signed on August the 1st with the Comets, of course, the New York Devils AHL affiliate. Not much more to really say, is there?
I think we've talked about it before. And I think that it's same sort of similar situation, you know. Jeremy said it best once, if you see something, you know something, say something. And I think that that's kind of the way I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and I will say, like, kudos to Utica here. I mean, like, obviously he's playing down, right, or was playing down. And so they had the opportunity to kind of, like, let this, like, not slide, but they didn't have to draw as much attention to it as I think they did. And I can really appreciate that about the team there. I think that says a lot about where that organization's at.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and just move right on into our weekly news recap, where we'll kind of take the tone back up a little bit, and we're going to get it started off with the AHL Howie's Hockey Tape Player of the Week.
Yeah, it's always a great way to kick off our news recap of the week, because this week we're talking about a goaltender. We're talking about the Milwaukee Admirals goalie, Yaroslav Askarov. He's been named the Howie's Hockey Tape AHL Player of the Week for the period ending December 11th, 2022. So Askarov stopped 60 of 61 shots over the weekend, registering one shutout and a .984 save percentage. Rumor has it that's pretty good.
I think that's verging on very good.
I'm not quite sure.
I know. I'm very optimistic about things, but.
Well, speaking of very good, there's a couple of good stats in the AHL, including the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, who scored 15 goals in their last two games. It's a little stretched out due to some funky scheduling. They only played one game last weekend, but they won a 7-3 decision against the Hershey Bears not too long ago. We're going to talk a little bit about more of them here in the roundtable coming up in a bit, but as well as 8 goals against the Cleveland Monsters in their only game on Friday. So the question going into their game against Hershey on Friday is, can they keep that pace up? I would like to say no, but I've been wrong before. The 15 goals in two games straight is a franchise record for the Penguins, which is very impressive on its own.
Meanwhile, Adam Gaudette has been suspended for 3 games following an interference call on December 7th against Belleville. He has already missed 2 games so far by the time this episode drops, but he will miss tomorrow, Friday's game against the Rockford IceHogs.
So, you know, here on the Holy Grail, we love to celebrate milestones, mainly talking about organizations and players. But today, we're queuing up the milestone alert for a brand new official. So congratulations to referee Jason Feist, who officiated his first game in the American Hockey League, which was in Toronto this past Saturday night. Now, he's no stranger to officiating hockey. He was actually awarded the 2019-20 Ken Bowden-Distel Character Award for Officials, which was actually voted on by his OHL peers. At that time, Jason had actually 550 career regular season games under his belt and 85 playoff games under his belt, all as an official. And away from the rink, he is a firefighter with the city of Kitchener, Ontario. So welcome to the AHL, Jason. Now it's time for our special guest of the week. Now, we teased it at the top of the show, but boy, do we have a special treat for you on this week's episode. Now, you've heard us talk about it quite a bit already, but the Atlantic Division has been a firestorm for hot talent, with teams that are seemingly just inches apart, if that. So we decided to invite on a couple of our colleagues that cover the Atlantic Division to help paint this picture and kind of deep dive into the division a bit. So first guest we have is going to be Samantha Wismer. She covers the league for her own AHL podcast on the Old City Sports Network called American Beauty, and cover the Lehigh Valley Phantoms for the Flyers Nitty Gritty. She's been on the beat for 3 seasons now. And also I asked her for a little bit of a fun fact or something fun about her. And she added that she has 3 German Shepherds. One is 8 years old, one is 4 years old, and a 7-month-old puppy. Second, we have one of our Field Pass Hockey colleagues coming on, Zachary Martin, who covers the Charlotte Checkers for us. He also talks about the Carolina Hurricanes on the Surge Cast, along with the Chicago Blackhawks in women's professional and college hockey on Let's Talk Woe Hockey. Now, he has covered hockey for a couple years now. His fun fact was he once talked to Tito Francona of the Cleveland Guardians. I need to hear more about that sometime as a Guardians fan. But Sam, Zach, welcome onto the show.
Thanks
for having us.
So when we look at the standings up and down, we have Hershey, Providence, Bridgeport, Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, Charlotte, Lehigh Valley, Springfield, and Hartford. Zach, I'll start with you. Where do you see some of the biggest changes coming in the Atlantic Division?
Big changes. I mean, if you look at the division as a whole, I mean, you got a lot of teams that are still somewhat in the top half of the league. I mean, you got Hershey at the top with Providence right behind them too. Bridgeport's right there in 4th. I think Charlotte's like 14th in the entire league. So, I mean, if you look at the, it's just at the whole league, it shows you how good this division is and how tough it is just by the points totals and how they've played each other too. Like, it's almost like any given night, one of these teams can beat each other. In terms of like changes, I mean, right now, Hartford's kind of at the bottom. If they can start kind of picking up too, I think you can have a whole division of teams that could make some noise this year and maybe make it tough for everyone else. I mean, I know Hershey's about 10 points ahead of a fourth place Wilkes-Barre Scranton, but I mean, if you look at Charlotte, even down to Springfield, the seventh, I mean, the top seven at any point this year could catch up and all play against each other to make a case for a division. So, I mean, honestly, it's a tough division to play in right now, just overall. Great hockey every night, it seems like.
Sam, do you think that it's rock solid right now?
Yeah, I mean, the Atlantic Division, like Zach said, it's definitely like where I even said this in the beginning of the season when we were doing seasonal previews, that the Atlantic Division is completely stacked. No matter what team you look at, you have a stacked team. Now, yeah, I mean, you've got teams that are not doing so hot, but even those players, even those teams are stacked. Like, this is a very stacked division.
And Corey, your Hershey Bears are at the top of the standings right now. I mean, is there anybody that you see as really coming up that could possibly overtake them?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I'm completely content with how the standings are sitting right now. They can stay that way all season if they want. But in reality, you know, I think it's a little deceptive still at this point. And I'm, you know, going to play devil's advocate to myself on this one. And I'm going to say the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins are a team that I think it's a mirage that they're only in fourth place. I mean, we're looking at a team here, as I was just doing a little bit of a look at this for a piece I have coming up featuring them, where, you know, they're in fourth place, but they probably shouldn't be in fourth place. And that's because they played four less games than everybody somehow. It was a total scheduling blip where they played like one game last weekend, and that was it. So they're, you know, they're playing Hershey two times this weekend. That's always been a tough matchup between the two. I mean, it's very narrow. It's very close. You know, it's the point spread is about even between the two teams. To me, that's a marquee matchup. I wouldn't be surprised to see that be a playoff series down the line. And I do think you have some good teams kind of at the bubble. Springfield is a team that, in my mind, doesn't stay in, I believe, what, seventh place at this point all season. They're going to make a strong push at some point. They have a lot of pieces there. Obviously, they have Matthew Highmore, who alone I think is worth discussing there as well. But like every team in the Atlantic to me has some piece that I think that makes them interesting, right? Like, you know, whether it's a score, whether it's a goaltender, you know, someone that can be an X factor. So every game against when these Atlantic Division teams play each other is really interesting for that reason. So I do think there's a lot of room for it to change. I don't expect it to stay this close, even if maybe Hershey and Providence maybe stays your 1-2, and maybe that defines itself a little bit. But even so, I mean, there's really, you can make a case for almost anybody right now to at least make the playoffs and be a threat, possibly, in my opinion.
So, I mean, Zach kind of alluded to it, but this division kind of seems to be taking a stranglehold on the top half, top quarter of the overall standings. In your guys' mind, what makes the division stand out against all of the others in the American Hockey League?
You want to take it, Zach?
I think if you just look at, I mean, standing out, it's an interesting division for the fact that you look at these teams that, well, I guess they probably have a lot of key pieces kind of up with the big clubs right now. I know with Charlotte, I mean, you got Zach Dolpe's up there, Chris Tierney's up there. They just, like, the Panthers just recalled Grigori Denisenko today, and also Alex Lyon is up as well. So now you're down to Matt Guzda and JF Berube, you know, former guy of the, you know, Jackets organization. So it's the fact that, like, how, like, less of the talent, the kind of talent they kind of have, they still have guys who can still score. They still got Logan Hutso. They still got, you know, Riley Nash, who leads the team with 22 points. I mean, they still got guys who can still put the puck in the net, still do their jobs, and they still got solid goaltending. I know on Saturday in the 6-1 loss, not so much, but usually Mac does a pretty good job for the checkers on the back end in net. So, I mean, with just if you look at Providence and Hershey and just everyone in general, like this, like even though a lot of guys are called up now, this division is still so stacked that it doesn't really matter. They still have talent top to bottom. I think that's the big difference when you look at other divisions where teams who are farther down in the points totals, you look at the rosters, you're okay, you can see where the discrepancy is between the Atlantic and everyone else in terms of talent that's called up, but there's still talent with the team still that's still getting it done night in and night out.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And I know I was texting Zach during the game on Saturday, and I was like, what is going on? I feel like, you know, I'm watching, not only am I watching the Phantoms, obviously, because I have to, but I was also watching the Checkers just to see how they were moving. And just, you know, I mean, every team has an off night, except if you're Hershey or Providence, which that never, ever happens. And it just felt like the Checkers had cinder blocks on their feet on Saturday night. And, you know, I mean, one game's not going to hurt you, but if you're in the hunt for playoffs, one game is absolutely going to kill you. And right now, you know, the Phantoms are chasing the Checkers for that fifth place.
Yeah. Corey, you had a little bit of a hesitant look on your face when she said that the Bears don't really have a night off. What?
Do I ask? Recent events conspire. It depends on who you ask. I don't really throw shade too much in the way of the Bears because, they just played a stretch of 5 games in 8 days. You know, that's tough on anybody. And, to Sam's point in a lot of ways, you know, with the way the schedule is, everybody's going to have an off night. Providence kind of had an off night on Sunday too, where, you know, they lost 5-2 after, you know, taking a couple of wins. And, you know, again, to Sam's point, you know, you're in first place, you know, as the Bears were after they, you know, went on a run and beat Lehigh Valley a couple of weeks ago and were in first place. They lost one game in regulation and suddenly, you know, Providence was back up by 3 points. So, you know, it seems like that, you know, the turntables turn, as they say, pretty quickly amongst, you know, if you don't get points, especially in these head-to-head matchups, there's been a lot of those. I mean, we saw a huge, you know, weekend with the top three teams in Providence and Bridgeport and Hershey, where they were all kind of taking turns playing each other here. And although mostly evened out to the point where it's, you know, no one really took the opportunity and leapt 5 points ahead of somebody else type of thing, it's still so close. And, you know, you look down at, you know, even to teams like, you know, Lehigh Valley and Springfield that are, you know, sort of bubble teams. If they get hot, you know, they have the capability. I know I'm a big Samuel Ayerson fan in Lehigh Valley. And, you know, he's a great goaltender. He gives the Phantoms a chance to win every night. You know, you can't underestimate that in a lot of ways. I mean, the Phantoms are starting to build in the right direction. You know, again, just takes one hot streak, one cold streak for another team. And, you know, suddenly you can shake up the division. It's still that close in my book. I mean, like, look at Wilkes-Barre. They win all 4 games. They're suddenly, you know, 2 points back of Hershey, I think, is all that they'd be back of. So, you know, you take some points and put in your piggy bank type of thing, you're going to see your stock rise.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like the season for the Charlotte Checkers, when they started the first 4 games of the season on a winning streak, they beat, you know, swept Hartford, swept Hershey, and then they kind of went a little bit cold and caught back up on another 4-game win streak in November. And right now they've, you know, as of today, they've lost like 4 of the last 5, and unfortunately, you know, they're 1-3 against Lehigh, and that's what got Lehigh Valley so much closer now, because you take 3 of 4 from Charlotte, the team who's ahead of you right now. That's why it's so much closer. Now they're like 3 points back instead of like, I think it was like 6 or 7, not even a week ago. So like what Corey said, team get on a hot streak, you face the same team 4 times in 9 days. Now you're looking at a possible top 4 in the division rather than fighting for 7th or 8th at that point.
And I think something that like kind of hurts teams, you know, especially I come from an injury riddled organization right now. We have nothing but injuries. Call-ups hurt teams. And I know Charlotte was definitely hurting this weekend with, you know, Lyon not being there. Let's not talk about the mental breakdown I had. Because that was actually going to be Alex Lyon's first time back since leaving Philadelphia. And unfortunately, he actually practiced in Allentown that Thursday. And then less than an hour after practice, he got the call from Florida and they had to ship him on the plane down to Florida. So I had a mental breakdown, but it's okay.
And by virtue of that same token, even with injuries, I mean, it, no team is exempt from dealing with something like that. Like, you know, you look at Hershey right now, you could look at them paper and say, oh, they're fine. They, you know, have had points, you know, they're 3-0-0-1 in their last 4 games since they lost, you know, a week ago. But they've been dealing with, you know, rotating injuries and building strong depth is a, you know, key portion of this as well. I mean, they're without Hunter Shepard, who was, you know, right after he got named goaltender in the month of November. Whoop, Darcy Kemper has an injury. He goes up. You know, Washington called up Lucas Johansson and Dylan McElrath ahead of the pair of games with Cleveland over the weekend. And Bobby Nardella got hurt in Saturday's game too. They were playing with five defenders for most of that game there as well. And, you know, you look at guys that are depth players, like I just did a deep dive on it for something that's coming up with Jake Massey and Logan Day. They're two guys that have been kind of sitting on the sidelines for a lot of the season. And now suddenly they're, you know, looking like they've played all, you know, 25 games of Hershey's season so far. So, you know, some of it is building good depth, but there's a lot of times where, you know, no team's exempt from being even pushed further than that too, where you're relying on ECHL call-ups, you know, working with what you got type of thing. And it's a challenge. It's one of those things where, you know, in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to surrender so many guys and so many man games lost, but it's part of the nature of the business, unfortunately.
It is.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think the thing about the schedule here this year, right, is we've got a lot of interdivision play, right? We've seen the Atlantic beat up on the Atlantic, the North beat up on the North, but this last weekend was one of those weekends where you saw some cross-division play happening, and it seemed, at least to me, being a Monsters beat writer, that the competition out of the North just isn't matching up with that of the Atlantic right now. And you see the Atlantic, I mean, even your seller teams like Hartford and Springfield right now, you know, splitting series with both Grand Rapids and Milwaukee this weekend. I mean, overall, when the Atlantic's leaving the division, it looks like they're performing pretty well in comparison. And so, you know, just kind of to your points there about how strong the Atlantic's been, just what have you gained from watching your beats play across division lines at this point? Like, what have you seen? What's the difference in play between teams in the Atlantic and teams in other divisions?
Sam, you want to take that one first?
Yeah, I mean, you know, interdivision play is super important, I think, not only to break up the monotony, because no offense, Corey, I love you, and I really do like Hershey, but I'm kind of sick of seeing your team. And then also, you know, just it breaks up the monotony. You get to see other players. You get to see the talent on other teams. I know Cleveland last year. I mean, Cleveland and the Phantoms were literally the blind playing the blinder. And it was bad, but this year Cleveland has actually just like taken everybody by surprise, and they're actually a really good team. And, you know, I wouldn't count them out in playoffs.
That makes me so happy to hear somebody else say that.
My blue line is going to need to get some return back, but I hear you on that one, Sam.
But, you know, sorry to interrupt you, but I've had other people come to me and be like, what's happened to Lehigh Valley? Because like, you guys kind of were pitiful last year. And I was like, Lappy has gotten better as a coach. I mean, you know, there's guys that are scratched and you kind of scratch your head as to why they're scratched. But anyway, and then, you know, we've got the likes of Tyson Forrester. Yeah. We had Cam York. He's no longer with us. he got pulled up, to the Flyers. I don't know how long he'll be there, but yeah, I mean, we have Tyson Forrester, we have Elliot Denoyer, you know, we have all of these talented kids, and you can definitely see that. I know Zach's watched four games, and I think he can attest to that.
Yeah, just a little bit. Then also, you know, Artem Anisimov, you add him to the lineup too, that kind of changes things a little bit. I want to talk about that 4 points he just put up against us Saturday night. That was fun.
That man, Anisimov, he's a great player, but he is not a talker. Literally, his press conference interviews are 2 minutes, a minute and 52 seconds. I looked at it today on my phone.
Yeah, he was like that in Chicago, too. It's just that's how hard he is. He's a quiet guy. He just gets his job done on the ice and is like, you know?
You give him the questions, he gives you the answers, he's out the door.
Yeah, pretty much. But,
I was just going to say, I will say I miss him in Columbus. Like, that was when I really started being, you know, like a season ticket holder, really big into the Blue Jackets. And Artem Anisimov was one of my favorites. Just a quiet confidence about him. And he can really come in clutch. That's a big signing for Lehigh Valley in my mind.
Artie party.
Yeah, too much partying on that night. But no, like going back to, you know, Jeremy's question of like just looking at inner divisions. I mean, right now Charlotte's played, you know, Syracuse, and they played Utica. They split both of those series. So obviously, it's it's good to see somewhat of a balance, like with even like with those teams. I know Utica's a little bit farther down, but Syracuse isn't like. I mean, they're pretty good for what, even in their own division too. So it's kind of like an even, like even against even at that point too. And then it's like, I know we got Rochester, you know, after, you know, later on in December after, you know, Lehigh, we got them coming up this week, and then at the end of the month they're going to be in Cleveland against the Monsters. So we get more North Division hockey, you know, and get to see how the comparison with that too is. So it's a small sample size for the Checkers this year with only four games, but even then you look at it, it's still, it's a good measuring stick to see how you are against the rest of the league, because it, like Sam said, you play your division so much, you're kind of like, okay, I kind of want to see other teams, how are we stacking up against them, because you can see your teams, you can see the, your division multiple times. You're like, okay, I kind of know where we're at with this. Now I want to see how are we against Utica, how are we against Syracuse, like, how are we against all these other teams? So I think it's nice to see where you measure up against everyone else outside of just your division, because after a while, it's just, all right, let's change up a little bit. So it's definitely exciting to see when we actually get interdivisional games.
Yeah,
I know. Sure. I know it's kind of how it was over here. I'm sorry, Sam. with, you know, playing Cleveland a little bit, where it felt like it was a different type of opponent. You know, now we switch over to playing five straight games with the Wilkes-Barre Penguins and, you know, the Phantoms here again to get, you know, some of our 26 games between those two teams out of the way type of thing. So it's lengthy. And like you said, we haven't really even seen that many North Division opponents with, you know, playing the Bears here so far this season. So it's definitely a different look. It's, you know, it's a good challenge, I think, for a lot of teams. Cause like, yeah, everyone kind of brings something different to the table. I know with Cleveland, it was their power play that, you know, pretty well torched the Bears over the weekend and, you know, kind of showed them that, you know, hey, as good as you've been defensively and on the penalty kill, you got a lot to learn. And, you know, Todd Nelson's really emphatic on, you know, saying about his team every week that, oh, we have a long way to go in this or that. You know, he's not satisfied with just getting a point or 2 points, whatever the case is. So I think it's good measuring sticks. You know, everyone just brings a little bit of their own edge to the table for sure.
Yeah, I know February, I'm really excited for the Marlies to come down to Charlotte. I think it's like February 10th and 11th. That's going to be a fun one too, because you got a team that's, you know, I think currently lead in the North, if I'm correct. Yeah. So, I mean, that's definitely another good measure, because like I said, you got Rochester. Charlotte's got Rochester this week, so you got the second team in the North. And then you get the Marlies in February, who currently sit at number one. So it's a good, like, indicator to see where you're standing at that point against the top two teams in that division. So, yeah, definitely some circled dates of teams in other divisions where it's like, okay, how are we measuring up against these guys who are taking care of business in their divisions?
Yeah, I know home game wise, we're not seeing a lot of interdivision teams until like March. More mostly like the interdivision games are away. And again, see Hershey a bunch, see Charlotte, see Cleveland.
Yeah, it's very interesting how the scheduling works out. Not just with the AHL, but the NHL too. It's like it doesn't make sense, and it's hard. There's no point in making sense with it. It's just you get what you get, and it's, you know,
deal with it.
It is what it is.
Well, maybe I'll throw this on the floor and I'll slowly back away to see who jumps in on it. Who do you think has the biggest chance of playing spoiler this year in the Atlantic?
In terms of like getting to the playoffs or ruining some people's chances?
Bit of both.
Providence.
I mean, in terms of spoiling, I mean, Providence is Providence. I've never really seen them have very many struggles. I would say if there's any team in the division right now that could play spoilers and like ruin other people's like chances of getting in there, if they sneak their way in, I wouldn't be surprised if like Springfield comes out of nowhere and decides to be like, okay, we're going to go on a run and bump, let's say, Lehigh Valley and Charlotte out, or, you know, they get on a ridiculous run and let's say Wilkes-Barre Scranton falls out for some weird reason. I wouldn't be surprised if Springfield did it, because it's, you know, we saw what they did last year. It's now the realm of possibility that Springfield just catches heat, like Corey said earlier, and they just start making some noise. I mean, heck, you could even say Lehigh Valley too, if they, you know, if they keep the run that they're on right now. Like I said, we all talk about Armin Nisimov. That could be an extra boost for them to even make some runs too. So I wouldn't look past Lehigh Valley and Springfield to, you know, make some noise you know, play some spoilers for these other teams who currently think right now that they're kind of sitting all right. I mean, Lehigh Valley and Springfield are like respectively only like 4 points out of fourth place. So I can see one of them doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, compared to how we were last year, it was a rough season last year, and, you know, lay blame where you want to lay blame, but I really didn't like seeing Lappy get railroaded the way he got railroaded. It's not his fault that he was a first-year head coach. When you're a first-year head coach and it's your first job head coaching a team and you're not an assistant coach in the NHL anymore, you have learning to do. And he even said, he's like, I was trying to be too much of a friend and not enough of a coach. And he's learned that. He's more of a coach now, and you can see that presence on the ice. And, you know, our power play is significantly better. Somebody tweeted me on Twitter and was like, how is the Phantoms power play better than the Flyers power play? I said, how are the Phantoms better than the Flyers, period?
Oh, no.
What am I wrong?
It's not a mystery to me.
But my host of my show and ourselves, we actually collectively agreed that if Lehigh or if the Flyers handled call-ups responsibly this year, this team was not going to hurt. And you can see how accurate that has been.
Speaking from firsthand experience, yeah, definitely kind of felt that over the weekend for sure.
Now our penalty kill is.
I mean, hey, your penalty kill did pretty good against the Checkers this past weekend. I mean, you know, I mean, the power play made us look terrible. Of course, that's what happens when you get 7 penalties in one game. But that's, you know, here or there.
I will say, Zach took my original pick, but it feels weird to me to be saying all so many nice things about Wilkes-Barre, but I got to go with them. Honestly, I don't know that anybody really, outside of Wilkes-Barre, at least anticipated the Penguins being as good as they are. And I've been impressed at how good they've looked. And it pains me to say that because, you know, I liked the beginning of last year in December when the Bears were beating the Penguins seemingly every time they played them. And obviously the script flipped on that towards the, you know, second half of the year. And obviously we saw how the playoffs went too. But, you know, they have a lot of really good up-and-coming players I don't really see a lot of people talking about, like Corey Andonovsky, not only because he shares my name and spells it right, doesn't factor in with a bias at all, a little bit there, but, you know, he's been really good. He's been a very strong pickup. I mean, you have guys like Philip Hollander, obviously Alex Nylander, and you have, you know, a great goalie tandem that I've been very interested to see in Philip Lindbergh since, you know, he was mysteriously absent all year. Last season, as well as, you know, Dustin Tokarski playing as well as he is. It's just, you know, they just have a lot of great pieces back there. And it, you know, it shocks me that I don't know they've exactly gotten the respect that they do just yet, but I'm going to go with them. And of course, I'd love to, you know, say a little bit about Hershey that I feel like they've been very good this season. I really like the direction they're trending in, both in terms of hopefully when they start scoring a few more goals and maybe not surrendering 5-1 leads would be nice. But, you know, everything else you can't complain about to this point because it's been great. You know, Mike Scarbosa's finding his game. He has the potential to be just a total difference maker. We just haven't seen in a couple of, you know, since before COVID shut everything down and all that good stuff. So I see a lot of positives of both those teams. That's why I think that, you know, these two games with each other over the weekend is going to be fantastic hockey to watch.
All right. So I just over my years of covering the American Hockey League and watching hockey, I've found that every team has a personality every season and every pet has a personality. So when I hear someone has pets, I instantly want to know more about them. So for our guests here that have pets, past or present, I just have a question for you. So if you had to compare an Atlantic Division team with your pet personality wise, which would it be and why?
Well, my oldest pup, she's 8. She's old and cranky. Who's in last place in the Atlantic?
Hartford.
Yeah.
Wow. You just said so much without saying so much. Like, you just like said so many words and just by saying that.
For my middle pup, the 4-year-old, she's just happy and just happy to be playing. So I honestly depends.
Okay, I could. Yeah. Okay.
You know, they're not losing, but they're not, you know, they're not doing terrible. And then my puppy, well, she's just psychotic, so I'll just go with the Bruins for her.
I have a puppy, a golden retriever puppy that'll turn 1 in about a month, like 1 year old in about a month. So I get that personality type very much so. Yeah. I get it.
Kelly, she's a Carolina dog, but they call her like an American dingo just because of the cousins of the, you know, Australian ones. She is 7 now. She can have days where she's completely mellow, but then she like just spazzes out of nowhere and then just mellows out right back again. So I would say Charlotte, just because of the fact that like one night they're just solid, like just doing their thing, and then like against Lehigh Valley, just completely spaz out and just get in trouble every 5 minutes and just have like, you know, a plethora of penalties, and you don't know what's going on. So yeah, she's definitely Charlotte right now, just like content and then spaz out of nowhere and then somehow figures it out later on. So
honestly, I was on the 3-game road trip that they had about a month ago, where they played Providence, Springfield all in one weekend. And because Providence and Springfield are so close to each other, like an hour and a half drive, we just made an entire weekend out of it. And from them playing Providence 2 nights in a row and beating them and literally beating the brakes off of them, I don't know how, don't ask me how it happened. I was too busy paying attention to one player.
Gee, I wonder who. Yeah, believe
now he's hurt.
Me. It was definitely an interesting weekend for the fact that you look at how that 3 games and 3 nights worked out, because then you had Hartford on Wednesday. Like that entire like 6-game road trip made absolute no sense, just because of the fact that it was, like you said, Providence, Hartford, Providence, back to Hartford. Then you get Bridgeport and Springfield right after that too, like that Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So it was just a chaotic 2 weeks for the Checkers on that 6-game road trip. So I don't know how we managed to, they went like 3-2 in that stretch, but somehow it worked, or 4-2. I don't know how it worked, but it just did.
And doing so many games like that, it's tiring to these guys. And I think that's what caught up to them during their Pennsylvania trip, is that they were tired.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, because you look at it too, it's like you're after that because you got Utica, and then the next weekend you got the Phantoms, and then they go play Hershey and then play Lehigh right back again. So I mean, that's definitely an interesting stretch where you basically play like the Pennsylvania teams of, you know, those two so close together. That's like I said, it's tough, especially against, you know, you're facing the number one team in the division. Then you get to see the team who you just played, who also had an interesting series in Charlotte, where there was a lot of, you know, tempers and, you know, some just exchanging Christmas ideas, because, you know, everyone loves to get together and just talk, you know, just to have a good old time down there on the corner. And, you know,
listen, my boy Belpedio doesn't know how to stay out of the penalty box. I love him to death, but he loves the sin bin. So
he wasn't in there very much though for the series. That was just kind of surprisingly enough. It was basically everyone else other than him.
Yeah, so. No, he got told. It's fine though.
And then Corey, did you have a response to that question, or are we good to move on into one team based question for each person?
Oh, I thought about it a little bit, and my dog passed away about a year and a half ago at this point. So I'm a little bit between right now, but she was a little Shih Tzu, and she wasn't the one thing we always used to do. We had this game that we played that, so she's small enough that like a regular sized tennis ball, she couldn't really close her mouth on it all the way. Like she couldn't pick it up. But bless her heart, she always tried, right? She would always put her mouth on it as much as she could. And when you get your hand close to it, she would just like snarl. Like she would just, you know, make this little noise. And so I kind of made up this game with her. It was kind of like playing with your dog version of hockey, where I could lead her with the ball and she would still try to keep her mouth on it. And, you know, I'd have two little goals, you know, the windowsill was one and, you know, the one foot rest was the other for her because it was smaller. And we'd play, I made a little sport out of it type of thing with her. And since she was, you know, very ferocious on her ball like that, she would always, you know, she'd always play it really hard. She loved it. She would go on and on and on with it. And, you know, and she usually ended up beating me. So, I give her the comparison of the Bears because she's very relentless like they are, works hard, enjoys it, and is having a lot of fun, and usually wins. So that's my comparison for right now.
I love how well thought out all those answers were. It's like it got a little deep there, and I absolutely love it. But like Jeremy said, like you guys all said so much without – yeah, it just, I feel like I know all those lovely pets already, but we're going to cycle in because I know we're running a little bit short on time, but we have, I guess, two more questions left for each of you. First of all, just real quick, how do you grade your individual beat team's performance this year? And what's one thing that they could do to get an A if it's not an A already?
For the Phantoms, I'm going to grade them at a B. They're doing fine. They got off to a slow start, but you know, I think that comes with every team unless you just had the cheat code. And one thing that they could do better is just not giving the puck up during the penalty kill. Stop. Like I sit there in the press box and I'm like, "Oh my God, just stop."
I would say probably like B plus, bordering on A minus, just because the fact that they had a good start, kind of faltered a little bit, but they had a good couple other streaks recently. And December has not been great to them so far. Like I said, they lost four of their last five. And it's mostly due to the fact, I mean, they scored four against, you know, Lehigh Valley, or scored six, but, you know, that was probably their best game that weekend, but over the last five, they've kind of faltered a little bit on their scoring touch. I think if they can just kind of get back to what they were doing before, I think that'll probably help them get back into the A range of just trying to figure out, you know, putting the pucks in the back and then not get, you know, too cute with it, just do what actually works. And I think too, it's like, you know, stay level headed because that game on Saturday, I hope it was just a random one-off because it's just whatever was going on that night. So I think if they kind of get back to their scoring touch and just kind of, you know, take a deep breath and know what worked for them from the beginning of the season, because they were on a hot start and they're still, you know, in a really good spot in the standings. It's just don't let this random stretch of December kind of falter and make this into a bigger thing than it needs to be.
I think they were honestly trying to rely on Berube too much on Saturday night. And
Well, the fact that it was his first start with the team since opening night, not the right time to rely on Berube. So, I mean, I feel bad for the guy. He's like, "Oh, hey, here's your first game back in like forever, and you're just going to get absolutely shelled on the 2000 game night for the Phantoms." It's just, and I think too, it's like they're trying to figure out how to play without having their not having Zach Dolby there, their captain, and also Chris Tierney is gone. So you're talking like two of your top three scorers are basically gone. Now you just lost Grigori as well, so you kind of have to rely on, you know, Riley Nash and Logan Hutsko. They can't do everything, so it's like you gotta try to figure out how to play hockey without kind of like their top five, you know, guys right now. So it's just trying to figure out how to play some hockey and have more depth scoring instead of just your top line.
I'd have to chime in and give the Bears an A-, and I know it's just because the bar for excellence is very high in Hershey. That, you know, there's a couple of pieces that, you know, Bears fans as well as myself wish were better. You know, the power play has not been Hershey's strong suit. It's given them a lot of problems in recent games more than solutions at times. You know, there's some elements that, you know, they were excelling in, that, you know, goals against and the penalty kill are two ones that I think have dropped a little bit here. They used to be the top defensive team in terms of goals allowed this season. It's now dropped to six, I believe. Just because of a couple of debacle games that I think you write off as one-offs essentially. But I mean, you can't be disappointed with how good the team's been in close games. And I think that's really, like, you know, the scoring quite hasn't, you know, for as many guys they have with great resumes, it just hasn't quite been there yet. But, you know, it's getting there. And I think there's a lot of room for growth. And I really do like Todd Nelson's approach to it in his first year as the Bears coach. I think he's been a great addition, you know, taking the reins there from a couple of solid guys. Just a lot to like, I think, so far. So, you know, I give him an A- only because, you know, it's not quite all the way to what I think Hershey would like it to be. And I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of a lot of Bears fans for that, to, you know, just keep setting the bar higher and pursuing higher, not get satisfied.
All right. And then we'll try to keep these next few questions very short. That way Sam can get out the door here. But Sam, we'll just go ahead and start off with you here. So Lehigh Valley had a notably rough season last year. In your mind, what was the biggest change between this year and last?
The team gels better together. And I think that's pretty obvious for anyone who's watched their team play the Phantoms. Corey, you and I coincide a lot with our teams here. I'm pretty sure you can agree with me that this team definitely played better together. Last year was just treacherous, to say the least. And, you know, it didn't help that we had – not only were the Phantoms injury-riddled, and then you had the call-ups constantly to the Flyers. That didn't help. But the team just – while they may have gelled well together off the ice, you can tell it just wasn't working on the ice. And I think that's what's working this year is that you have these kids who already know each other because they played together during the COVID season, and they're back. And I just – the team just works better together.
And then, Corey, we've talked about Hershey so much, and they honestly seem to be on top of the world right now. What is the singular thing in your mind that has gone right for them to keep them there right now?
I think it's really just been they've gelled well as a group. It's not one person. You know, they have a lot of players that you'd think stand out. Connor McMichael right now, Hendrix LaPierre, you know, two highly regarded first-round picks in terms of their scoring. But, you know, it's really been a group effort, you know, where one line might not score, you know, another has. And there's been a lot of great depth finds that the team's had over the summer. Ethan Frank is one that comes to mind immediately, as well as, you know, Logan Day and Jake Massey. And Mason Morelli is another great one, too, that, you know, they're all AHL contract guys that did not originate within the organization. But the Bears have really kind of found some diamonds in the rough. So, you know, while they're missing Lucas Johansson and Dylan McElrath, a lot of, you know, top marquee names type of thing, you almost don't even notice it because those guys have slotted in so well. So, you know, I think it's a lot of great scouting. You know, I give a lot of the Bears a lot of kudos for finding a lot of, you know, great guys and using them well in their system. And, you know, aside from, you know, a couple of weeks at the beginning of the season where it was rough, the Charlotte series is one that comes to mind. They've done a great job, and you just really can't be dissatisfied with it given the amount of change.
And finally, with Zach, I mean, Charlotte has lost three straight heading into this week. What is the big takeaway to turn things around?
I would definitely say, like I think we were mentioning earlier, is the fact that they kind of have to work and understand that it's like, yeah, you have all the, like I said, Zach Dalpe, Chris Tierney, you know, Dennis Senko just went up there, even Matt Kjerstad. One of their top defensemen, he's also up there as well, and along with Alex Lyon. So it's like you kind of have to piece it together and understand that it's like you have to get these other guys going too. I mean, you got Zach Unas, like he's got to get going, and you got to look at guys like Connor Bunneman, you know, Jerry Mayhew, and like I said, Logan Hutsko. Like they've got to make it work. Henry Bowlby played pretty well the last few games, but I think you gotta get the depth scoring going. You can't just rely on your top line to do all the work. And I think if Mac Guzda plays out of his mind like he has been this year, I think that's definitely going to help as well because he's been pretty solid for the Checkers. It's just the defense needs to find a way to not give the other team so many chances to put so much puck on the net and give them high danger chances. So I think it's a whole team effort that needs to get built up with the fact that you do have five guys up with Florida right now. I think it's got to be a lot of figuring out how to get that, what they were doing before, but now tighten it up a little bit more with the guys that they kind of have with this team. It's just getting back to the basics at this point. You got to figure out what you can do to replicate what you did the start of the season before this 4 out of 5 stretch where it's just you can't figure it out. I think that's what they need to do right now.
So I guess kind of last question for Zach and Sam. So we have our own little fantasy AHL fantasy league going on here. And a few of us are going to be swapping out our players later, whether it's for injury or call up or just because they're underperforming. And there's a chance we could take Lehigh Valley might come up on our random generator and we have to select somebody. So aside from on Lehigh Valley, Cal O'Reilly, Louis Belpedio, and Vinny Letteri, who already are on our teams, or sorry, not Vinny Letteri, sorry, Samuel Ayerson, who are already on one of our teams, is there anyone from Lehigh Valley we should consider if we land on them?
Elliot Dinoye.
I'll keep that in mind. Awesome. And Zach, how about you? We have Riley Nash already on a team. I've got Zach Dalpe, even though he's with Florida. Hopefully that won't last long. Santtu Keenanen. Anyone else we should consider if we land on Charlotte?
I would say look at Anton Lefche. I think he's a very sneaky good player. I think definitely need to look at him. I've been seeing his name a lot, Logan Hutsko. He knows how to score. He finished top 5 on the team last year. He's currently 5th right now. Played out of his mind in Boston College. Really killed it up at SSM as well. Shattenkirk St. Mary's. Like that's a guy who knows how to score goals. If he stays healthy, he could be a solid top 9 guy even in Florida. So I say definitely look at those guys. And I would say even for another sneaky pick, Henry Bowlby, look for him because he's been playing pretty good too. So I think any of those guys, you're looking pretty good. If you want to go for a goalie, Matt Guz is not a bad pick either. Like I said, he's got some really good stats this year. He's been playing out of his mind for the Checkers, even with swapping off with Alex Lyon. So you really can't go wrong with any of those guys.
I'm glad you included a goalie because I will be switching out my goalie.
The Mac Attack is a good pick if you're looking in terms of cool. Picking up a goalie.
With that, I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up. So, Sam, if our listeners would like to interact with you or follow you on Twitter or check out any of your work, where can they find you?
So you can follow me on Twitter at Samantha Wismer, and you can also follow my podcast. I believe the at is at AHL Buttes.
And Zach, how about you?
Follow my personal at One True Zach. If you want to check out all my writing or keep up to date with me on terms of live game tweets, where I drop the articles there and just, a little banter back and forth with some other my fellow writers here at Field Pass, you can follow me at FPH Checkers on Twitter. So having a little bit of fun trying to get a voice onto that account, just having fun with everyone. So if you want to keep up to date with anything Checkers wise, check me out there.
All right. Well, Sam and Zach, thank you both so much for joining us to talk Atlantic Division. I know I learned a heck of a lot here. And for listeners, I guess, stay tuned. We're going to be trying to do one division a month here to round out the season. Coming up, hopefully in January, we'll be tuned into the North. So, Zach, Sam, thanks again for your time tonight.
Thanks for the invite.
So now for the first time in a few weeks, we are going to check back in with our Wheel of Fates. Here is the latest update on our Wheel of Fate teams as of, I guess, pregame on Monday. So in first place, no surprise, Corey is in the lead with a whopping 458.5 points. In second is Zach almost 50 points back, but it's so easy to make those up with the right moves. Hint, hint. So Zach's in second with 408.25. In third place, Andrew at 406.25. So close, him and Zach. Jeremy is in fourth with 355 points. And boy, do I have some making or some room to make up as I am sitting in last place with a lowly 336.25 points. But because we're sharing this, you know that means we're going to be having some rerolls here. Four rerolls across three people today. For myself, I'm going to be rerolling on my goalie. I'm very sorry to Grand Rapids and to UC Okanora, but he's only gotten me a grand total of 43 points. Whenever, you know, Corey's got 96 points from his goalie, Andrew's got 63 points from his goalie. Yeah, I definitely need to take a shot at another goalie. And then I'm going to be using one of my complimentary rerolls on Jake Christensen, defenseman. As much as I love his play and all that, he's been up with the Blue Jackets, it seems like, almost all season. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just nothing's happening on that line in our spreadsheet. So I need a new defenseman.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, like, same kind of story with Sheldon Dries, right? I mean, he's up in Vancouver. Like, he's not looking like he's going to come back down to Abbotsford. I mean, he's been skating as an extra, but you know, he's going to be so up and down, I think, this year that I don't want to risk it anymore. It's time to part ways and try to find a forward that's going to get me more points than I think the 16 that he's gotten me so far this year in the three games I think he's played.
Yeah, listen, I'm kind of in the same boat where I'm happy about it, actually, because it's Jason Magna that I'm re-rolling on because he was up in the NHL. He actually got picked up on waivers by the Anaheim Ducks when they were trying to send him back down. And if anything I know about the Anaheim Ducks, it's that they tend to hang on to players for a long time there. They've done so with my Bears forward, Brett Leeson. So two former Bears are teammates over in Anaheim. So I figure I want to get some points on the board here and see what I can get on reroll.
All right, let's go ahead and pull up our wheel. Okay, I'm going to go first. Goalie or defenseman from the Toronto Marlies. Do we have anybody from Toronto already on? I don't think we do we?
I don't think so.
Okay, that means I kind of have my pick here. Notice how Zach is staying very tight-lipped. I love how at the beginning of all this, you know, we want, you know, there was so much sharing, so much.
So, okay, let me give my opinion on the Marlies, which I haven't done to date on this pod, okay, this season. Goaltending, it's a carousel, right? I'm afraid that if you take someone, they're not going to stay, right?
That's and very true.
Seemingly the goaltenders in high-level Toronto are made of glass, okay? So I would say a defenseman if I were you, okay?
Yep, I'm looking at one right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, I like Hoffmeyer.
That's who I'm looking at.
I do. I do like Hoffmeyer. That would kind of be my first and only pick.
Yep. I mean, I was just kind of looking here. So if you go on the AHL.com and you can just look at team stats, I'm looking at – I've seen 5 different goalies already this season. That doesn't give me any confidence in their goaltending and just completely solidifies what Zach just said. Hoffmeyer, 19 points, 44 penalty minutes.
He's getting over it. Like, I think it's going to wear off at some point because I think he's learning a lot about the AHL. And that's kind of my opinion on it. Like, I think that he's getting there, but he just needs a little bit more time and fine tuning.
But when he needs, you're saying fine tuning, but he's already fifth on the team in scoring. I think that's a slam dunk for me.
Yeah. I mean, fine tuning in penalty minutes.
Oh, well, at this point though, I'll take it because those are points for me. So goodbye, Jake Christensen. It was nice knowing you. Or I wish you all the best in Columbus.
Let's get this over with.
All right. So, Jeremy, Sheldon Dries, you have the Charlotte Checkers. Now, we just heard from Zach Martin on his on his opinions, but who are you looking at?
Yeah, yeah, and it would be so great if I retained things, if I remembered.
This is hard.
Oh, man, though. I mean, it's just like...
Are you looking for a forward or defenseman here?
I don't want to answer.
Why don't you want an answer?
I want a forward, but I'm just like not like these aren't fantasy numbers, right? Like Charlotte is winning games by not producing players who are racking up fantasy points. Like that's my biggest hang up here. I mean, really the only example of that to this point is Riley Nash, who unfortunately is sitting pretty on Andrew's team. I mean, to Zachary's point, like, got a lot of players who are up right now.
He did recommend Husko, if that
he did.
That was his recommendation.
Yeah.
And though, I mean, he's got 37 shots. I mean, that's definitely good help point. If you're debating between him and
Anton Lefty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Logan Hutzko is going to get me more points than Sheldon's going to, so let's go ahead and go that route.
And now, Corey, are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so Corey's spin ends up on the Colorado Eagles. Corey, why do yours always seem to go out west?
Yeah, it stinks because I don't hardly know anything about some of these guys, honestly. So it always makes it when I got them the first time, which is funny because that's where Jason Migna originated from. So I'm kind of going back to the well in a sense there.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that was the easy one back then because I knew of the, previous Bears connection there. And it's hard to pick from a lot of these because a lot of their top scores are listed as inactive on the AHL site here. So it kind of leaves me in a bit of a pickle here, I guess I'd say.
Yeah, all the top three, Brad Hunt, Charles Houdon, Jean-Luc Foudy, all with the Avalanche, it seems.
And, of course, I'll get my look at them later on tonight when the Flyers play them. We're recording right now. It's only minutes away from puck drop.
Did you and Galchenyuk?
That's what I was just looking at, but I don't know what his like he has 9 points in 9 games, which is great. And I see his games have been recent, too.
Yeah,
but how did he get there?
He signed a PTO with the Avalanche and then got sent down.
I believe it's a full 1-year deal now.
Oh, nice. So with he actually got
relief. Wait, is it with the Eagles or is it with the Avalanche?
With the Avalanche.
But he got sent down, eh?
I'm looking it up right now.
Because, I mean, I'm looking at the point spread on him, and, like, in those 9 games, he's only got 1 game where he doesn't have a point.
So he played with the Marlies a couple of seasons back. And I'll tell you this, he has some really great on-ice vision, great passer. I think if he kept passing the puck, he'd be an all-star. If he can put pucks in the net in the AHL, it remains to be seen.
Yes, this is a full 1-year deal.
Okay.
With the Colorado Avalanche.
I'll take it at this point, just because I feel a lot better about that than I feel about anybody else right now, whether that's status-wise or just knowledge-wise for me. I mean, I know Alex Galchenyuk, of course. You know, he's been obviously around for quite some time, former first rounder, number 3 overall. You can't beat that to have that at the AHL level. But we'll keep it in mind for a potential re-roll down the line in case, in case something changes, I guess.
All right. And I am up for my goalie, UC Okanora. It seemed like a nice pick back at the beginning, but he just hasn't panned out the way that I was hoping. So let's just hope I'm not like Corey and I get the same team again. So anyone but Grand Rapids, please. And I get the San Jose Barracuda.
Maki and Emmy.
Yeah, I'm just making sure. I don't think we have any.
Is he called up?
I'm pulling up the roster right now. I think not. Oh, don't do this to me.
I honestly think he is.
Okay. San Jose.
He is up right now. He's, yeah.
Oh, that stings. They have Dell?
Have Dell, but.
Right.
How long is Makaniemi going to be up, though?
Are you able to take it? If he's up?
I mean.
I'm good with it. I think so. That feels like a okay.
How many games has he played in the NHL this season? Heading over to Elite Prospects for the info. Only 2 games. And this is one that I can always re-roll on again because he is up if he's not there for a while. But I will take his 6 wins, his 313 saves. Definitely over UC Okanora's.
Well, and it does look like James Reimer was cleared to play. So that I think would. Yeah, he was actually. That actually hasn't been updated yet. According to Cap Friendly, Itu Makuniemi was sent down yesterday.
Well, so wonderful. Okay. So that whole conversation has been rendered moot. Awesome. All right. So here are the new Wheel of Fate teams. And we will check in again next week with updated totals. So, Zach, last chance.
I'm sticking with Berggren. You know what? I love to see the success in the NHL, but he's going to come back down in mid-January, and he's going to light the league up like you've never seen it before.
I have a feeling Andrew would be very happy if that pans out, and you, obviously.
Andrew is shaking his head because he knows he's staying up there.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're just going to cruise right on into the race for the Holy Grail, where we check out the latest standings in the American Hockey League by division. As always, Corey is our Atlantic Division expert, so he will kick us off here.
Yeah, so I mean, we kind of just went over that largely in the roundtable, right? I mean, it's the standings are, you know, Hershey's at first place, 37 points, Providence 35, Bridgeport 32, and then a tie between Wilkes-Barre and Charlotte at 27. Wilkes-Barre has the breaker on that one, followed by Lehigh Valley 6th with 24 points, Springfield at 23 in 7th, and Hartford in 8th with just 19. So, although I wouldn't say there's any clear-cut, you know, favorites right now, it's really an interesting point spread. It was an interesting set of games, 3 games in the between the top 3 teams over the weekend, with Providence and Bridgeport splitting a pair of games in a home and home. An away team won both of those games, as well as the Hershey Bears beating Bridgeport on Friday. So it's been a tight race, but really it's a matter of, you know, one team winning a couple of games, another team losing. Obviously, Bridgeport's kind of a little bit behind the eight ball there for first place compared to Providence and Hershey, but those two teams have been trading first place for a little bit here now, so I'm not going to say I'd be surprised to see that trend continue. I mean, both teams have some tough games coming up here this weekend, I believe. You know, obviously Hershey plays Wilkes-Barre, who's, you know, kind of found a, you know, chink in the armor for the Bears here so far this season. The Bears have a 3-2-1-0 record against the Penguins through 6 games of 12 this season, with this weekend being matchup 7-8. So it's going to be a tough one for the Bears to figure out. I think it's another measuring stick game if I'm Hershey, for sure. So we'll see if that doesn't lead to any shakeups in the division here this weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at the North, I mean, it's been, I feel like I sound like a broken record saying it, but really just status quo in the North. I mean, even when Cleveland goes out into the Atlantic and picks up 3 of 6, I mean, it's really, nothing really changes there. It's pretty status quo. And so, and I'm sorry, they only picked up 2 of 6 there. And so, you know, for me, I look at this, and the only difference really is that a team like Utica, who has played 4 games less than Belleville, is only 3 points back. So that's a little bit of a creep job that they're doing there. They're trying to make their way back up into the thick of things by points percentage, currently 5th in the North. And so obviously they need to play the games. They need to make up the points, but they're somebody to keep an eye out for. And Syracuse is actually, you know, picking up some points here and there. They're charging a little bit, which, you know, has teams like Cleveland needing to be more on top of their game to make sure they hold on to that 3 spot. But don't look now, but Laval picked up 3 out of 4 points against Belleville this weekend. So we skipped Hot or Not, but I was going to throw Laval a bone on my Hot list. So we'll see if they can get out of the cellar. They've just dug themselves into such a hole that it's going to be hard for them to really be competitive in the North this season. So we'll see how this one tunes out. But for the most part, status quo.
Especially since they have the most games played in the North Division too.
Yeah. I mean, they're behind the ball on this one. Yeah, it's just tough. Bad start, rough goaltending, not great defense to start the season. Going to be hard to make up for that.
Well, I'm pinch hitting for Andrew here in the Central Division. And for the most part, kind of like Jeremy up in the North, it's status quo. However, if you want an idea of how close the middle three in the Central Division are, so just last week, the Manitoba Moose were in third place. Despite having a 5-3-1-1 record in their last 10, they're now in 5th. Why is that? Well, first of all, it doesn't help that they've played 2 and 3 fewer games than their counterparts in the Rockford Ice Hogs and the Iowa Wild that are currently sitting in 3rd and 4th place. And honestly, that is where the difference is. When it comes to points percentage, Manitoba would still be in 3rd, but by nature of those points and the fact that they've played less. And, you know, Rockford's got 27 points. Iowa Wild got 26 points. Manitoba, 25. Just something like not playing as many games in a week as someone else is really going to jostle the inner part of that division. But from top to bottom, surprise, surprise, Milwaukee still on top, followed by the Texas Stars. Then we just talked about it, Rockford, Iowa, Manitoba. Then bringing up the rear, hate to say it, but Grand Rapids Griffins and Chicago Wolves, Andrew's 2 beat teams. A little bit rough to be our friend here.
And he managed to pick 2 last place teams. But there's not.
Oh, no.
Sorry, yeah.
Just pile it on, Zach.
There's not too many changes in the Pacific Division. The Eagles are continuing to fly high, going 7-2-1 through their past 10 games, and Calgary has won 9 of their last 10 games, good for 1st and 2nd in the league. They've had 6 straight wins, that Calgary team. Now, Ontario is just a hair back, thanks to 2 straight wins. Coachella Valley makes up spot 4 with points in 5 of 6. San Jose and Abbotsford make up the middle. And if you cover your ears, folks, number 7 Tucson has lost 5 straight games, and the number 8 Bakersfield has lost 8 of their last 10. Number 9 Henderson has dug their grave in the first 2 months, and that kind of outshines that that 5-5 record that they've had going on for the past little bit. They're 13 points back as of right now, and clear the cavalry because the Gulls have lost 8 straight games heading into this week, and they're now 2-10 at home.
I know we don't do oof anymore, but I want to say it. Oof.
Continuous. Ugh. Oof.
Just ouch. Ouch. All right. We're going to go ahead and look forward now and give you our game of the week picks.
Yeah. So for mine, I'm looking at it. I'm just kind of saying that it's going to be Hershey and Wilkes-Barre. I know I'm a broken record. I talk about it all the time. But the season series has been so good lately. And, you know, I know one of the games this weekend is Wilkes-Barre's teddy bear toss. Of course, you know, the Hershey Bears may toss teddy bears a little bit better. That's between you and me. You know, that's the but the season series has been good. It's been a lot of fun. There's a lot of good teams, a lot of good storylines out of it. Philip Hollander has absolutely torn it up against the Bears here this season. He's been fantastic. Obviously, you got Dustin Tokarski and Philip Lindbergh and Gopher Wilkes-Barre. And obviously, Hershey's coming at it with, you know, one half of their excellent tandem with Zach Fucale still, you know, representing. Unfortunately, Hunter Shepard is still up. But we did have Clay Stevenson debut in the AHL last week, and he won his first game, a 3-2 decision. So he's been pretty solid. I'm expecting, you know, the Bears to want to have a little bit of revenge for the last game where Wilkes-Barre handed them a 7-3 loss in a bit of one of the recent debacle games that Hershey's kind of had lately. So I think those are going to be two games to watch, and, you know, following that right up on Sunday, it's Hershey and Lehigh Valley. You know, we got the whole trinity of Pennsylvania teams playing each other with the exception of, you know, Wilkes-Barre and Lehigh Valley, which I'm sure is coming up soon enough too.
Yeah, and as I look at things, I mean, I'm going to do Andrew a solid here and get a little bit of the Central involved too, and that's looking at Toronto and Milwaukee this weekend on Saturday. I mean, it's a matchup that pits the top two in the North and in the Central together. It's going to be fun to watch. I mean, Toronto, and it's the test, right? I mean, it's just, once again, like we talked about with the Atlantic Roundtable, is once you see some of this interdivision matchups happen, you can kind of get a feel for, okay, best of the best in both divisions, who's the best of those two teams? And one game's not going to tell us that exactly, but good litmus test there on Saturday for the Marlies and for the Admirals.
I'm turning my sights to the teams dressed in green in the Central Division this week, with Texas traveling to Iowa for back-to-back games on Friday at 7 p.m. Central and Saturday the 17th at 6 p.m. Central, times that I know Zach really likes. It always seems like every year when these two teams square up, there's something big that happens. I don't anticipate that this series is going to be any different. This is a nice chance for Texas to really help separate themselves from that middle part of the Central Division, or it's a chance for Iowa to regain some ground. Either way, lots of stories possibly coming up here in the making, so I'm taking that series as my pick.
Yeah, and give me Coachella Valley going against Tucson on Sunday. I think two of these teams are on two different ends of the rainbow. And I think this Tucson is looking to break that five-game skid, and Coachella Valley is coming through points in their last six. And I think that this is the second of a double weekend for the two of them. So that's where I kind of look to see, is this an opportunity for Tucson to maybe turn it around, or is it status quo for Coachella Valley?
Yeah, and speaking of the Wild and the Stars, we do have an AHL free game of the week between the Wild and the Stars coming up on Friday. It is a 7 p.m. Central Time start time, 8 o'clock if you're on the East Coast like me. This matchup will be free on AHL TV, so you'll get to see a good battle that we're featuring here as one of our matchups to see here, and you'll be able to see it free on AHL TV.
Shoot, I didn't even look that far ahead in the script. Hey! I guess I picked the right one. Good job, AHL.
I know what you'll be watching. We also have live action on the Field Pass Hockey app this weekend as well. No, I keep forgetting that this is coming outside points. Two teams near deadlocked will go toe-to-toe when the Americans ride into Charlottetown. The Amerks are 12. Charlottetown is in PEI. I don't say they're going to PEI, but they're going to Charlotte, North Carolina. The Amerks are 12-9-2, but the Checkers have pretty well the same record, just one OT loss more, and that's coming up at Friday at 7 and Saturday at 6 Eastern Time. You can download that on the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store.
I hope nobody bought their plane tickets based off of that comment. Jeez.
A drive.
Just a little bit. Just a slight difference between PEI and North Carolina. But hey, it's all good. So we're just going to go ahead and wrap up this show here with our bonus round. Now, Andrew was the winner last week, but since he's not here this week, Zach once again is going to step in with kind of a spur of the moment bonus round. So what do you have for us?
Well, this is a bit of a trivia piece, and maybe some of you guys already know this, But one team actually laid down blue ice to play hockey in the American Hockey League. Can anybody name what team that was?
Was this recently?
Oh, define recently.
That tells me possibly within like the last 5 years.
We're talking like 2 decades here.
Oh, that's why I wouldn't know.
Now, I will say the team is still around.
Toronto? I don't know. Either Toronto or Rochester.
I was going to say Rochester. It feels like something that Rochester would do.
I'm just thinking about who that possibly could be. I would assume it would have to be a... It sounds like a West Coast thing, to be honest with you. But if it's a team that's still around, I mean, shoot, that probably predates a lot of the Western Conference, to be honest, though.
Was there ever a team in Boise, Idaho? I feel like that makes sense with Boise State having the blue turf.
Right?
I'll go off the wall and say someone like Hartford, maybe.
It was actually Rochester. So I'll read you this release dated March 10th, 2005. The Buffalo Sabres announced today that they've installed a light blue ice surface at HSBC Arena, now KeyBank Arena, for 2 American Hockey League's game being played by their AHL affiliate, the Rochester Americans, on Sunday, March 20th versus the Cleveland Barons, and on Sunday, April 3rd against the St. John's Maple Leafs. I would be lying if I didn't say that I was a little rotted when I seen the game starts at 5:05. So it, by the sounds of it, they even had it screwed up back then. Okay. Terrible. We did not do this. Okay. We did not do this and we're not going to do this.
What feels more sacrilege to you, the game starting at 5:05 or the ice being blue?
Well, you know what? They actually had that reverse retro Buffalo Sabres logo that they have now on the ice. Oh, so it actually looks pretty cool, I got to say. Okay. And it looks oddly strange. I wish I could find some footage of it. There's one picture circling around, but like, other than that, it's pretty pretty hidden.
I know, now I'm looking it up, trying to find something myself. Oh, that is like the lightest of light blue.
Well, it's ice. How do you make ice any other color but white?
Well, that's a fair point.
I feel like they tried to do it very dark, and then by the time the ice got through, it got lighter and lighter.
Well, because what did they – I mean, like – because the ice is like as white as it is because they layer down – they have paint underneath the surface. So I'm wondering, like, did they have to, like, melt it and then – or did they do, like, a – I don't know. I don't know what the science is. I don't know if we should get into it. But fascinating.
So
it doesn't look bad with the red – the buffalo head on the ice.
So they had yellow ice at the time, the yellow blue lines rather. So it was supposed to look better on TV. That according to the almighty Reddit. But, you know, here we are. I can kind of see it where it might look a little better, might stand out. And that's a picture from the game.
It looks like concrete.
It does.
Looks like a roller hockey rink, honestly.
Right? That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Especially the lines being yellow and blue.
The article that I found talking about it says, are the Sabres the most progressive organization in hockey?
No. No, they're not.
I was like, wow, blue ice does it for them?
Blue ice makes you progressive. You heard it here.
Well, can they do like a reverse retro night with that? I wonder. Like,
but make it
blue again.
Literally blue. Make ice blue again.
So well, they did it with 2 teams that wear blue jerseys. That's what gets me. The St. John's Maple Leafs wore blue. Rochester wore blue, and then they just put it on a blue ice rink. I don't get it.
I'll add it to the list of things that the Buffalo Sabres have done the last 20 years that I'll never understand. But with that, I think that's going to be it for the Holy Grail this week. If you'd like to see or hear more of us, please subscribe to us on our YouTube channel or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Also follow us on Twitter
at the Holy Grail. You know how it goes. G-R-A-H-L. And you can also check out all of Field Pass Hockey's other podcasts, including Inside the SPHL with James Hayes. If ECHL is more your speed, join Matthew Harding and Jason Mowles as they break down the ECHL's Wichita Thunder and chat with some of the team's legendary players. You can catch the Rolling Thunder podcast bi-weekly on the Field Pass Hockey website. And then for more AHL coverage, you have Syracuse Speaks with Alexander Ackerman, which is a Syracuse crunch-centric podcast that focuses on maintaining a balanced perspective in the ever-shifting world of minor league hockey. And don't forget, sometime in the new year, Monsters Musings with my friend Jeremy and myself will be coming back. So on behalf of Zach, Jeremy, Corey, and myself, we'd like to thank Sam and Zach Martin once again for taking their time out with us this evening. And we hope you all have an amazing week. We'll see you next Thursday. Bye.
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or a topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.
And here's Jeremy. Well, here's a black box representing Jeremy.
Oh, what is he in? What is he in the Utica?
Oh no!
What? What? Too soon?
It must be a Zach thing.
Oh no! Oh no!
See, you have one Zach on the pod. Now you got two. Jeremy. That's just double the trouble.
We did have two Zachs on last week, though, and it went just fine. So, I mean, there's hope.
This is just the month of Zach.